With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. PFF Podcast is brought to you by TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a TrueCash offer sent in minutes, which you could take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. TrueCash offer not available in all areas. Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Mike Renner for our draft show of the week. We apologize for bringing it in on a Friday instead of a Thursday, but a hectic week with interviews, Mike.
Yes.
I didn't get the Bengals
draft. Yeah, a few rounds I heard you made it through, yeah. But it's not, if you're not first, you're last, apparently. So
wow.
No one's going to ever know.
They said it was close.
Yeah.
And I thought I made a good pitch right here on the PFF NFL podcast earlier in the week for what I would do as Bengals defensive coordinator. But as they say, you know, the experience.
They need to have like a Rooney Rule for analytics people.
Yes.
You got to interview one analytics person every hire.
That's a great call. Just like somebody who's completely unqualified, mm-hmm. like me. You have to get him in the mix there. It's disappointing, but the experience was great. And I think that'll do me well next time I'm going for another position that I'm completely unqualified for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But for now, I'm back. I lost a little leverage in my PFF contract negotiation, but we'll try to find some other options.
I'll help you out, Steve. You need a recommendation for that. I'll gladly. You need.
Are there any modeling options? I think I might be able to put that in front of Neil as another opportunity. Is that secretive or is that
what secretive?
Your modeling career.
I don't know what you're talking about, Steve. So I guess it is secretive.
You know, Instagram's public, right?
I do.
I saw some pictures.
I was featured on an account with over 1.2 million followers, Steve, so no big deal.
Do you want to talk about it?
I'd rather not. This is a football podcast, Steve. Let's get back.
Because for a minute there, we had a text exchange with a few of our other colleagues, and we couldn't figure out if you eloped or if you were modeling. It was that intense.
It was a good time. Yeah.
It was great.
It was good picks.
So you're not married?
No.
It's good to know. We're not going to talk about Bob Kraft today. We're going to talk draft. Let's go. So what we did just this morning, Mike, we went through... put together the PFF top 50, our initial top 50 on the draft board. We're always kind of revamping this thing. It's not strictly based off the grades. The grades influence it quite a bit. Our eyeballs influence it quite a bit. And essentially, We're evaluating players, trying to see what we think they're going to do at the NFL level. The grades are a huge component of it because now we have more and more data to rely upon and say, okay, look, he's good in this area, not good in this area. Mm-hmm. We do take positional value into account. So I think in our board, you're going to see maybe quarterbacks. So we don't love the quarterbacks, so they're not going to be that high. But if we have to decide between a quarterback and maybe a tackle, we'll take the QB.
Yes, we're going to be higher on them because of they're just so much more valuable.
They are, and they're worth the risk. And corners are going to be a little bit higher if we really like them as well. So the board isn't out until early next week. But let's discuss some of the things, some of the places where maybe we differ.
Okay.
From the rest of maybe the draft world. So let's start with our number one player. Let's discuss the debate at the top.
Okay.
We decided on Kyler Murray.
Yes.
At number one.
We decided on it. I compromised to Kyler Murray at number one because it's in my mind. So I look at it like this. If you're going to take a quarterback highly, you better feel confident that he's a franchise guy. And not just a franchise guy. I think you have to think he's capable of top five, top 10, you know, not Kirk Cousins sort of play, not that step below where it's good, but I think you want a guy who can carry you to a Super Bowl. For my money, Kyler Murray has those sort of traits, and especially when you factor in his running ability. I don't see Dwayne Haskins. For me, he caps out in that tier below,
right,
which at that point, then I'm not putting him at the top of my big board. Right. I don't see him being that guy. I think he can very well be in the Kirk Cousins range. I could foresee him being that sort of quarterback, which, again, has a ton of value. That's why you drafted highly. But to me, if you're a quarterback that is capable of being in that upper echelon of QBs, that's when you can go number one. That's when you're number one in our big board.
Yeah, so again, from an eval standpoint, the guys that are 2 and 3 on this list, we feel better about them as players.
Yes.
From a value standpoint, Kyler Murray is our number one QB on the board. He's going to be nothing's going to change in that regard. The numbers are pointing toward him being the top quarterback. Our eyeballs, whether it's Zach Robinson, his opinion on it, or everyone else around the company, not saying it's consensus, but we feel pretty good about Kyler Murray. Not as good as Baker Mayfield, but feel good about him at number one. Tell me about two or three.
And then two and three, Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams. For them to bust, for them to not live up to and be at least high-quality starters at the NFL level, injuries, it would have to be injury-wise or something off the field. Completely. Yeah. They're on field. I have absolutely zero questions about them translating to the next level, being successful NFL players. At that point, that's why they're 2 and 3. Any player, regardless of position, if you were that to me, you would be 2 or 3, maybe not running back.
So the confidence level and what they're going to do at the next level is extremely high. Mm-hmm. Especially given what we've seen from our defensive line grades. Bosa has been an elite defensive lineman in our grades. Quinnen Williams had the best grade we've ever seen from an interior defensive lineman, so we feel good about those two guys. Let's go to where. So Kyler's the first one where we really differ from the consensus. Give me some other names. What are some other guys that we feel better about than maybe the general consensus out there?
Well, at number 11, checked in, Jerry Tillery. Defensive tackle,
that's a big one.
Notre Dame. And yeah, that's a big one, being a top 12 sort of talent in this draft class, above any of only Jeffrey Simmons and Quinnen Williams were higher on our defensive tackle list. And Simmons, we obviously are saying he tore his ACL early. We think he could even come back as a rookie with how early he tore his ACL. At that point, if you're not missing a whole year, we trust doctors, we trust rehab. We're not going to give our medical opinion on this guy. We think talent-wise, that's where he deserves to be. But then Jerry Tillery, in my mind, is the best pass-rushing defensive tackle in this class after Quinnen Williams. The most pass-rushing moves in this class, and I don't think he's going to be a great run defender, but again, you don't need to be a great run defender. As long as you're solid in that regard, what he can do as a playmaker, what he can do in the passing game is that valuable, in my opinion.
Yeah, he can get after the QB. We're seeing, I've seen him in the late first. I've seen him in the second round in various big board rankings and draft boards and all that. So
the interesting thing with him is I've seen consistency being noted as a knock on him. And yes, early in his career, that was certainly the case. This past season, though, game in, game out, he was disruptive. There weren't games he took off. While he had like a majority of his sacks in the Stanford game, had a ton of sacks in that game and didn't have sack production consistently throughout the year, he was still pressure production for, in our grading, very consistent.
Yeah, you know how I don't love the consistency argument because we have every snap, and if the grade still comes out on top, then
you're probably okay,
we talked about last week. The two cornerbacks, that's, I said we'd be a little bit higher on some than others. Greedy Williams, and Byron Murphy, Greedy Williams from LSU, Byron Murphy from Washington. We have Murphy at 6, Williams at 9. Again, I don't know that we feel like they're, you know, it's tough to say that they're slam dunk corners, but they're good enough. The value in the top 10 makes a ton of sense. Other people have them more at the bottom end of the first round. Greedy Williams' grade wasn't as great this past year, but I think I tweeted this out recently. When you just look at our three-year grades, and that's what I love about the database that we have now, is we've got these guys' entire career. Taking the last 3 years, it's DeAndre Baker from Georgia, Byron Murphy from Washington, Greedy Williams, all very close to each other in overall grade. Very different styled corners, but guys we're all going to say are going in the top 10 or top 10 players in this draft.
Yeah, the Byron Murphy to me is he's the best cornerback in this draft. I think he's the safest cornerback in this draft. I could foresee someone being better down the line, but he has the you know, the change of direction ability that you love at the cornerback position. The athleticism checks all those sort of boxes. Yes, he's undersized, may not be a press man corner, but zone still, you know, zone and off coverage is still what you'll see more of any coverage at the NFL level. So I think any sort of scheme that's zone heavy, he is your guy. He is your top corner on your board because he's so good in off coverage, so good at breaking on routes that I think that just that automatically translates to the next level. That sort of instincts and athleticism translates to the next level.
So many plays where he just plays with his eyes on the QB, and that's yeah, it's very much going to be scheme dependent. I like Greedy Williams as a press man corner. I like Murphy in zone, like you said. I like DeAndre Baker maybe as the best hybrid of the two. You mentioned Tillery, and then Andre Dillard. I don't know if we're higher on him than others. I've seen more mid-first round type stuff for him, but a guy that's been excellent in pass protection at Washington State, and we know that's the most important thing for offensive tackles. I feel like the rest of these offensive tackles beyond, say, Jonah Williams come with some question marks when it comes to pass pro, and I think that moves Dillard a tick above some of the others.
Yeah, he has a handful of different sets that he utilized at Washington State. Very adept at all of them, and has the best first punch of any of these tackles in this draft class. Super long arms, just stonewalls pass rushers in their tracks. And he just didn't have, even though he had gave up a handful of pressures this year, some of them came on stunts, just didn't have any ugly reps that some of these guys did. He pretty much never gets himself in bad positions as a tackle, you know, never really ends up whiffing for air. So for that reason, I think he's the best. It's the second best tackle in this class after Jonah Williams.
And then Dalton Risner, a guy that we're still higher on than most, but I think between Dalton Risner and Juwan Taylor from Florida, Risner, of course, goes to Kansas State. Between those two guys, I feel better about them in the run game than in pass protection. My only question with Risner is, you know, he wasn't really challenged in the Big 12, had some ugly reps at the Senior Bowl, even though overall he was pretty good. I really, really want to love him because the production was outstanding, but you kind of have to adjust it because of the Big 12.
Yeah, he doesn't have the foot speed that the other guys have on this list. Juwan Taylor, Dillard, Jonah Williams. He just doesn't have that sort of quicks. And on the edge, he was holds up great against power. I mentioned the Montez Sweat game before, how he
so
won
strong
that matchup, you know, in a powerful, long edge rusher like Montez Sweat, who's getting first-round hype himself, wins that matchup. But if he when he goes to Senior Bowl, sees some guys with quicks, all of a sudden he looks like a fish out of water. Quickness is going to give him an issue. Teams may see him as a guard. I think he still hold up a tackle, but that's why he's a notch below these guys.
One other guy I want to mention, Will Grier, the quarterback from West Virginia. Is this your upside quarterback in the draft, Mike?
Oof. I love you saying upside there because, again, no one knows what it means.
Guy.
Literally doesn't have a big arm. No one else would call him an upside quarterback, but he's accurate. And has been accurate at, you know, all levels of the football field in our quarterback charting. And as you said, the analytics point to those being good indicators of NFL success. So we think, you know, he has upside. Oh, he has this because he's accurate at throwing a football. But still, there are question marks. And I go back to the Senior Bowl, which he just, it was bad.
I don't want to overrate the Senior Bowl, but it was
I know,
not good.
Like, you come to perform there. It's more of a pressure. It's more how you react to the pressure of this situation being your biggest job interview yet. And he did not react well.
And just to compare to what Baker Mayfield did last year, the whole like tick every box concept, Baker did that. You know, his off-field, what other people called antics, we looked at it and said, man, that type of confidence looks great. Senior Bowl, Baker played well. Mm-hmm. Everything else played well. So if you're Will Grier grading well in our system, if we saw that good week at the Senior Bowl and he just kept ticking every box along the way, you'd feel a little better about him. But I still think maybe if he's a back end of the first, if you're talking about the Saints don't have the first round pick anymore, but the Patriots looking for their next guy to develop, I wouldn't mind Will Grier as that guy if I'm a team looking to develop someone. maybe more than I would want Daniel Jones, and you know, who looks like an upside quarterback.
Well, again, because you go to all the quarterbacks who have been late rounders, developed into, you know, elite or high level quarterbacks, Tony Romo, Tom Brady, those sort of guys. Did they have cannons?
Like, even Dak.
Dak
as a fourth rounder.
Did they have very strong arms and all of a sudden figured out how to throw accurately? No, and all of a sudden figured out how.
Who are the guys that have done that? Where are the Logan Thomases, the Christian Hackenbergs, the guys who we're not picking on Hack again.
Okay.
He doesn't even have a big arm.
But
where are the guys that
had
big arms that figured it out late?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The John Skeltons. That was John Skelton.
Oh,
cannon.
Gosh.
No idea where it's going.
Yeah.
Guess what happened in the NFL? Cannon. No idea where it's going. All right, which guys are we lower on? Because we have some unique draft boards. A lot of our stuff's going to look a lot like everyone else's because, you know, good football players generally rise to the top. But we definitely have some guys way lower than other people are expecting.
But there are also going to be a lot of guys who are just volatile prospects who some people like and don't because, you know, depending on the game, but they're just inconsistent at the moment. And when you're inconsistent in college, some people are going to see the game where you played poorly, and some people are going to see the games where you played well and say, oh, you know, I can harness that well. Some people will see the games they played poorly and say, oh, that's what he's going to be at the next level. We take the grades more, the breadths. We have all the games. So we say, oh, over all his games, he wasn't that good. That's why we're probably lower on some of these guys.
You weren't here last week, but Sam and I went pretty in-depth about what we do versus traditional scouting and that basic concept. I thought that was a fun little discussion about, you know, the four-game sample, the six-game sample versus us having every single snap.
And so Rashawn Gary is kind of the poster boy for that in terms of you see reps on tape where you think, oh, my Lord, like he picks up offensive tackles off the ground sometimes. Oh, if he can do that every single time, he's worth a top five pick. Yes, if he can harness that, he's worth a top five pick that he's being rumored to go. But the amount of times he does it, the consistency with which he does it, is not even close to being willing for us to invest top five pick. He's, you know, later in our top 50.
If and when he crushes the combine, does that change your mind on him at all?
No, it's your point. You're about to say it, I know. Don't check athleticism twice. Don't, you know,
yeah, and I'm not trying to.
You already saw the athleticism on tape.
Right.
It's not going to.
If we're going to look at athleticism at the combine, there are certain positions where it matters a little bit more. There are certain positions, you know, if a corner runs a 4.8, you know, you're gonna do a double take on him. If an edge rusher puts up ridiculous numbers, you might go back and try to, you know, talk yourself into him. I just want to see are we going to talk ourselves into Rashawn Gary, and you know, our evaluations aren't final, but. We see him more as a second round type of prospect. I don't see myself changing my mind on him and putting him in a first round mock over these next couple of months, even if he breaks.
No, I mean, like, I've watched all his snaps from this past season, and I just could not feasibly get on board with him.
Daniel Jones, another guy that we're higher on. He's not making our top 50 initially. I don't know if he'll break it. We're going to probably have him as an early third round type of player. When we talk about developmental type of players, I don't think he's. He's not inaccurate to the point where he's broken or anything like that. He is inconsistent from snap to snap. And when we do talk about developmental prospects, the thing I will say for Daniel Jones is we've seen him get better. We've seen him take this step. He's still fairly young, and he has some NFL type of tools. So I don't think, again, using Hackenberg as the extreme example, I don't think this is a Hackenberg, you know, unfixable situation. Mm-hmm. But I think the Daniel Jones risk of trying to get him to become an NFL quarterback is a good risk in the third round rather than the first or second.
Yeah, exactly. If you're taking him in the top 15, you're saying he's starting for you for 2 years. You know, if you're taking him first round, again, like, there's only been a handful of first round quarterbacks that haven't started at quarterback for the team for multiple seasons, that haven't made it all the way through their, you know, rookie contract with the team. It just rarely happens. So you're forcing a guy who you have major concerns about into a starting role right away. It just doesn't seem like that's going to work out. That's why we're saying third round is where he might not even see the field over the course of his rookie contract in the third round. That's where we'd be more comfortable developing a guy like that.
That's where I liked a guy like Mike Glennon a couple years ago.
And I think he went third round. So,
yeah.
But there was
first round hype for Mike Glennon at one point. And he's a guy that put together some reasonable starts.
Yeah, and that's
point.
The thing.
And you hope that you just can increase that consistency.
And I think that's a third rounder is worth. A backup quarterback who can come in and maybe win you a game when your starter gets hurt, play some adequate football,
like a Nick Foles,
that's worth a third rounder. Yes, that's worth a third rounder. That's where you should draft those guys. You shouldn't just push them up all of a sudden because, oh, you know, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl now. Oh, those guys are now all of a sudden more valuable. No, they're not. They're still not worth the first rounders.
All right, a couple of the guys that we are lower on. Ed Oliver, we're going to have right around 22. Of course, he's still getting top 10 hype. I think people are souring on him enough that I think those are merging, our takes
yes.
versus the community's take. Greg Little, I think his stock's really been all over the place depending on
who
you talk
about. He's another guy who's been all
about,
over the place, yes.
Talk to. Drew Locke, he's getting top 10 hype. Mm-hmm. We're going to have him bottom end of the first round just because he's a step below Haskins in our world. And again, there's let's just say this. There's a breadth of outcomes, essentially, in player evaluation. And not just college to pro, but NFL year to year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when a player's something year one, there's a range of outcomes the next year for what he's going to be. He's not going to be the same exact guy from a production standpoint. He'll be within a range, right? The Drew Lock range is just way lower than we like to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like a small percentage chance that he hits this high end and a much bigger percentage chance that he hits this below average NFL quarterback range, which is like, all right, when do you really take that?
Yeah, I completely agree. The quarterback value aspect, or the quarterback where you draft quarterbacks, is a very interesting conversation because we always say, you know, quarterback's so much more valuable, quarterback's so much more valuable, but it's a position where you don't want to be, like, just having an average quarterback is not actually that valuable. Like, it's not necessarily, even though it might be worth more wins above replacement than Aaron Donald, the 13th best quarterback, might be worth more wins above replacement. You can't get a defensive tackle that's even close to Aaron Donald.
Yeah, you don't want to saddle yourself to that
exactly,
quarterback, right?
Exactly. So that's what I'm getting at. It's difficult to sort of parse that out.
So I would say so in a perfect world, Locke is the guy for, again, I'm using the Patriots as an example, but you could say the Saints if they had the pick, the team that's looking to have a guy sit, even if the Steelers don't believe in Mason Rudolph, do they want the next guy to sit? See who the replacement's going to be for Big Ben, whoever it is. The Chargers, the next guy for Phillip Rivers, right? I feel like Drew Locke's in that range, where if I was one of those teams and he's like say an average quarterback, and you can try to develop him because there still is a chance that he could develop. Mm-hmm. It might be low, but you're not tied to him.
Yes,
right. So you want to give him a chance. So like if Andy Dalton had a chance to just like maybe become elite. While he's sitting behind someone, I'm just using an example,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
you would take that chance, mm-hmm. knowing that you could always get the next guy. You know, it's a tough.
Yes.
It's really a tough
like Andy
place
Dalton
to be.
Went where he should have gone.
Yeah,
realistically.
He did. I think
and,
so.
And that's where quarterbacks like that should go, because one, they don't always hit, and two, when they do hit, it's not exceptionally high end.
I thought Geno Smith, right? So the Jets took Geno Smith in the second. It was their third pick of the draft. They had two first rounders and then drafted Geno Smith. And even though Geno Smith didn't pan out, I thought it was an excellent use of a draft pick.
Yes.
Right? Mm. You say, oh, you lost your second round pick, but that is the type of risk reward that you might want to take on a quarterback in the second. They were never truly tied to him as the starter. You just see what you get and then you move on if you have to quickly.
But I feel like the whole conversation about quarterback value, passing game being so much more important, is pushing the guys that used to go there in that range
just pushing them
higher
up. Right. So Drew Lock will very potentially go top 10, mm-hmm. as people say. All right, two Mississippi State guys that were lower on, Montez Sweat on the edge, Jonathan Abram at safety. I think both guys just had issues from a production standpoint. Sweat, I mean, you're really low on him compared
yes,
to others, and you're our edge defender guru here.
Yeah, so I get he has long arms. I get that he's fairly explosive for his size, but that only gets you so far. Offensive tackles in the NFL are very strong and very big and have long arms. You have to
they
have
do.
Something else to be able to scare them. And at this point, I don't think Montez Sweat has that something else that scares me.
Yeah. Look, again, if you haven't rushed the passer at a high level in college on a snap-for-snap basis, we've rarely seen the jump at the next level.
And he had that one rep at Senior Bowl that everyone highlighted. And again, it was just a bull rush through a college offensive tackle and even a smaller college. It was Tyus Howard, the Alabama State guy. So he's not even close to NFL level at this point, NFL ready at this point.
Nope.
That was his one rep. And even just in terms of his win rate at Senior Bowl was not that good in the one-on-ones.
No more one-play scouting.
Mm-hmm.
Sweat most recently in Mel Kiper's mock draft, number 5. to the Tampa Bay Bucks. I think that would also be too high. As far as Abram goes, I think he's another, like a Rashawn Gary. He's made Feldman's freak list. Mm-hmm. He's really fast. I feel like he could be the guy that he didn't grade well for us. He had two exceptional games in the grading. I think we can maybe post something about that in the future and show how like his high end. Mm-hmm. But overall in his career did not grade well. But I could also see him in that Keanu Neal role where he just plays this
simplistic
strong safety role where he uses his athleticism and flies to the ball. So I think in the right scheme, maybe you get something out of him, but I'm not ready to put him in the first round like some other people are. And then let's just discuss from a running back standpoint, the top running back on our draft board, by the way, to the dismay of George and Eric, the fact that we put him even this high, Josh Jacobs from Alabama, who is getting top five hype as well, top 10 hype. And we've put him at 41. So this is one of those, Mike, where we're going to get trashed by normal football people for putting our top running back at 41. And then we're going to get trashed in the building by our numbers guys for putting him as high as 41. They're like, no, put him in the fourth round. Don't care how good he is. But Josh Jacobs is a very good running back as a player. He's very
But then again, it comes down to you can take Josh Jacobs. And I've seen him top 10. I've seen him, mock to the top 10. You can take Josh Jacobs there. You'll get a good running back. We believe he's a good running back. He has receiving skills as well. But then you could also get David Montgomery at 50 or Devin Singletary at 60. You get one of those guys there, far less investment, and the incremental difference is negligible.
Right.
You know, Dave Montgomery after the catch is absurdly good. He broke 23 tackles a couple of years ago on only 36 catches. He is great in space. He's the most elusive running back we've seen. So that sort of difference in talent ability or difference in production that you'll get from those two just does not warrant drafting a guy that highly.
Yeah, and if you guys want more information on why we hate running backs, I thought Eric Eager did a really nice job writing about Zeke Elliott because everybody's asking about our Zeke grades this year, and there's a difference between our grades and value, but even the grades were lower because he had six fumbles, which is absurd for a running back. That's way too high. That pulled him down quite a bit. But even when Eric dove in through the numbers, there actually wasn't anything special about him as a running back compared to what his run blocking was. So the point we try to make is I think Zeke is an extremely talented running back. There is a difference in running back talent, but it does not always come across in running back production. That is the biggest issue. The difference in talent does not match the difference in production. That's the simplest way of saying running backs don't matter. Everybody likes to get this extreme running backs don't matter thing. That's what they're saying.
There are a lot of guys who are big and fast and elusive.
Yeah.
There just are a lot.
But there's also slow guys.
There's not a lot.
Who, if the run blocking is good, will get five. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's the other issue, too, is you're also dependent on your surroundings more than other positions. That's the whole running back argument. We've got a few more minutes here. It's going to be a quick one today because we're going to be going live, almost live. Mm-hmm. Live to tape, as they call it in the industry, on Sirius. Don't forget, Mike and I on Sirius Radio every Friday night on the NFL channel. That's channel 88 from 7 to 9, discussing a lot of this same stuff. There were a couple things in the Mel Kiper mock I just want to run by you quickly. Mm-hmm. You've got Rashawn Gary at 4 to the Oakland Raiders. We keep saying this is the one that shows up in everybody's mock draft. That I think would be a mistake. Obviously, we just talked about Gary. Montez Sweat at 5 to the Bucks. We think that might be a mistake. TJ Hockenson to the Lions. We like Hockenson quite a bit as a player. You detest tight ends in the first round.
I mean,
in the top 10, they're really
Lions
risky. Lions
fans know why I detest tight ends in the first round. Because you draft Eric Ebron over Aaron Donald.
And let him walk, and he gets 15 touchdowns.
Yeah, that one's just not happening, I'll just say.
But what about the Lions passing on a cornerback? I mean, they need to start with that pass defense first and then work forward. Greedy Williams, DeAndre Baker, Byron Murphy, not necessarily all of them, but Greedy Williams I think would be a great fit.
Well, yeah, as a cornerback or pass rusher. Obviously, in this draft, they went a lot of pass rushers early, and they didn't have one, but they have to address one of those two positions because, one, the value is going to be there,
right,
and two, it's such a huge need. I think it's going to be one of those.
Very risky if they're taking a tight end. Mm-hmm. And then the Buffalo Bills at number 9, he goes with DK Metcalf. So Metcalf's a guy that we said, look, the production doesn't match the hype, but the more we watch him, he'll probably end up with a first-round grade from us. He does do first-round type of things. Oh, man, I could see, this would be an interesting one to the Bills when you talk about helping out Josh Allen, his deep speed and Allen's ability to get the ball down the field. I wouldn't hate this pick for the Bills. DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I think he's a better version, or what they wanted, you know, Kelvin Benjamin to be. When you have someone like Josh Allen, I think you want a sort of jump ball contested catch receiver, because he's not going to, even on his deep balls, he's not going to be hitting you in stride every time. You're going to have to adjust a little bit for Josh Allen.
He's got a big catch radius.
But like, yeah, but DK Metcalf has that and has speed and has strength to win at the catch point. Kelvin Benjamin did not have a vertical jump. Kelvin Benjamin could not get down the field fast enough.
He's,
you know,
so
for
much
even.
Better
so,
than Kelvin.
So this is not even a debate here. I do think, though, this class offers a lot of those type of players. If I'm the Bills, I'd rather address that on the wrap in the second round than right there in the top 10. Because, again, defense is this draft's strength.
I know they have a great pass defense in Buffalo, and everybody wants to rebuild the offense. But Byron Murphy, as a zone corner, going to that zone scheme opposite Tre'Davious White, and then maybe circling back in the second, third round and stocking up on playmakers, whether it's wide receivers, tight ends, whatever it is, I think would be a fantastic strategy for the Bills.
It's like you can't. Who doesn't want a better pass defense? I get being like a
no,
good
there's
pass
too many
defense,
corners.
But who doesn't want being better at pass defense?
You can literally never have too many corners.
Correct.
On your team. All right, man. It was a quick one today.
Was.
But you know, that was our draft board. Check it out over at ProFootballFocus.com. It'll be up early next week. Next week we're all going to the NFL Combine. We're gonna have a ton of fun content coming out of there. We're bringing the cameras. I'm going to be recording some of the stuff behind the scenes. We have meetings with all 32 NFL team clients. We're going to try to bring you guys some of that as much as we possibly can. We'll do some daily recaps and all that fun stuff. Our combine week is a little bit earlier than all the workouts, but we'll try to get you guys behind the scenes on some of that. We'll keep the podcast schedule. I'll be back here Monday with Sam, and you and I are going to go do some serious radio right now. So tune in if you guys, you know, every single Friday night, 7 to 9, the PFF show.
Like I said, turn it on at the bar.
Turn out the bar.
Yeah, ask the bartender.
Ask them to do it.
Yep.
All right, and everybody who listen, we'll be famous. Well, you're already.
Thank you.
The number 15 bachelor and a model. So
thank you.
Can you tell everybody what you're doing Monday
night? Nope. Let's just keep going. Let's end the show.
How much of your life am I allowed to tell the public?
Not any of that.
All right.
We
won't tell anybody. That's it. We'll see you guys on Monday. Thanks for tuning in.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.